Welcome to the August 11th service of the Unitarian Universalist Congregation in Blacksburg, Virginia. The service today is led by our settled minister, Reverend Pam Phillips, and the title of her sermon is Sources of Our Self-Worth. The podcast begins with opening words, read by Worship Associate Earl Irwin.
Our opening words this morning are by the Reverend Sharon Wiley. We speak so often of brokenness in religious life. Let us speak today of wholeness. You are welcome here, all of you, every part of you, beautiful just the way you are. Here, you do not need to be something or do something. No holding back, no hiding, no exerting yourself, no trying to do more or be more. You have inherent worth and dignity. Nothing to prove here. Nothing to prove to me or to the person next to you or the children downstairs or to anyone. You don't have to try and be witty or more quiet or more outgoing. You are beautiful. Every part of you beautiful, just the way you are. You do not need to change anything about yourself to be welcome here. Your skin, your hair, your belly, your limbs, your face, all beautiful just the way you are. You are extraordinary. Each and every one of you, different from each, and beautiful in your own way, breathtaking. Let us worship now together. Please join me in reading these special words by Cooper Garrett as we light our chalice. O divine love, with the kindling of this flame, may we realize and love our true selves, our true round belly selves, our true bags under our eyes selves, our true naturally hairy selves, our true wrinkles on your skin selves. May our self-love help keep our chalice ablaze. Our reading this morning, in your orders of service, you may notice it was attributed to Jay Abernathy, but these words actually are written by Reverend Naomi King. We found these words on the UUA worship web, where they were erroneously credited. But Rev Pam did some fine detective work in the middle of the night and found out that these were actually written by Reverend Naomi King. When we introduce ourselves to another person, we usually extend our hand and summarize ourselves with one word, usually our name. Hello, my name is Naomi. These are the kinds of face-to-face greetings that initiate relationships, that open hearts, and act as a bridge of connection from one person to the next. But there's another kind of one-word naming that goes on in our larger society that burns bridges, locks down relationships, and keeps us from living our promises to each other. We know these words. These are not words I need to repeat here, for repeating them simply gives them more power. But they're the more horrible terms equivalent to shark and monster and demon. These are words denying inherent dignity. These are words that undermine and attack inherent worth. For these words have one powerful, hurtful message. You are not worthy. You are not human. You are not enough. Throughout my life, I've had plenty of these words, those labels ascribed to me. So many that although I may stretch out my hand and say, "Hello, my name is Naomi," what I'm saying at times is, "Hello, I'm worthless," or, "Hello, I'm bad and wrong." I came into our religious community because we promised to counter those messages. I am part of a religious community because we promise not to reduce each other to terrible labels, not to strip each other of our humanity, not to ascribe levels of worthlessness to one another. Most of us need to celebrate life, to feel our inherent worth, to be restored our dignity, to practice justice, equity, and compassion in human relationships. Most of us yearn to say, "Hello, I am somebody," and to be greeted, "Hello, somebody, welcome. We're glad you're here." Most of us hunger for affirmation and celebration in who we are and in the gifts of blessings we bring this world. Most of us come here to be greeted as the loving, generous, compassionate people we are.
You would think from the reading that we would have noticed that probably Jay Abernathy was not the author. I puzzled over that the longest time, and then I Googled. I am somebody. You are somebody. We are all somebodies. And yet, as our reading suggests, we are all at risk of having our somebody-ness stripped away from us. We are all at risk of being labeled, of being judged not worthy. We are all, knowing that our sense of self can be at risk, that others might regard us as less than or not enough. What can we do to establish and maintain our sense of self-worth? So today's service was suggested by Avi Schroff, who bid on and won the sermon for sale at our annual auction. I am so grateful for your generosity, for buying the sermon, but really for your generosity of time and sharing your thoughts with me as I prepared. And I'm grateful to Earl because she found those fabulous readings. Everybody chuckled at the word belly, didn't they? Avi's suggestion was inspired by an essay written by her daughter, Leah Mehta, which was in turn inspired by this book by Toni Morrison, the Pulitzer Prize-winning Nobel laureate who died earlier this week. Synchronicity? Yeah. The title of the essay, "The Source of Self-Regard," explores how sources of self-regard for African-American women changed over time, as reflected in her novels Beloved, which is set in slavery and Reconstruction, and Jazz, set in the 20s. And Mehta explains in her essay that rereading Morrison's essays encouraged her to ask friends about their sources of self-regard. Some of the people she asked were bemused by her question. It was not something they expected to hear as they sat at their children's soccer game. And she explains that thinking about self-regard can be tricky, let alone talking about it. She writes, "The more time you spend thinking about self-regard, the more confused you may become about your place in the world and what you have taken for granted. It may even make you uncomfortable. Self-regard is deeply personal, not just because it touches on self-esteem and self-worth, but because it is referenced by all the relations you have or don't have and the society you live in." Now, as Avi and I discussed the topic, we differentiated between self-regard, thinking of that as defining who we are and our place in the world, and self-worth, which feels more like judging who we are and our place in the world and determining our value and worthiness. But I don't want to get caught up in the difference moving forward, so give me a little latitude here. More to the point is that neither self-regard nor self-worth can be determined in isolation. Who we are has much to do with our relations with other people and with the wider world. Think about how we begin to develop our sense of self as small children. We begin to know who we are by how we are raised and what role we play in our families. We internalize the messages that our parents send us, those verbal messages and those nonverbal messages. Some of us had parents who were highly critical, who constantly redirected or scolded us for what we did or said. Some of us had parents who were highly supportive, who constantly praised us for what we did and said. And still others, and perhaps most of us, had some kind of mixture, with parents who were critical in some areas and supportive in others. Their praise for one aspect of who we are, our appearance, our intelligence, our behavior, made it clear that that was important and other things maybe not. And those of us raised with siblings or close relatives of the same age found ourselves being judged in relation to other children, the good ones versus the bad ones, the easy ones and the troublesome ones, the sweet ones and the mean ones, the smart ones and the nice ones. In my family, we had the artist, the brain, the drama queen, and the jock. Expectations that we all had to live up to or live down. Can you think of how you were defined in your family? How it's helped develop and define who you have become? And once we go to school, the messages we get from our families are supplemented by our teachers and our peers. At Sages this week, one of our members shared that they remembered a teacher who ridiculed one of their classmates every Friday because they didn't wear the school colors. And that was 60 years ago. It's clear that those messages are strong to us and to others. But as we get older, we continue to get messages about who we are and what we're worth from other people, from friends, colleagues, supervisors, our religious communities, and those messages are both negative and positive. One of the people who responded to Leah Mehta's informal poll, an academic and scientist, said a source of self-regard was prizes, which she regarded as appropriate, writing, "Prizes mean something about ability, hard work, recognition, prowess, status. Self-regard is your relationship with the world and whether you are appreciated, whether you are heard." So our self-regard stems in large part from our relationship with the world. It can be a reflection of what other people think of us. But it's usually not a simple reflection, because our ability to see what others see in us is often filtered through our earliest experiences. Someone who has worked hard in their field and gained success and admiration, but whose earliest messages were that they were not good enough, can have a hard time seeing themselves the way others see them. There's something called imposter syndrome. Have you heard of it? It plagues people who receive negative messages as they were growing up. No matter how hard they work, how much success they achieve, how many accolades they receive, they still worry about people discovering they are imposters, that they are not as good, as capable, or as smart as everyone thinks they are. I heard a few chuckles of recognition. Yeah? And of course, the opposite can be true. Some people seem to have all the confidence in the world. And I say seem because I'm aware that some people who seem to have it all together often carry doubts and anxieties that we never see. I think of the people I knew in high school and college who seemed to have it all together. They were popular, they were talented, and they ended their lives by suicide. And then there are those people who really seem completely oblivious to what others think of them and have very little self-awareness at all. I don't even want to go there. So far, I've been talking about how other people, our relationships, can influence our sense of self. But our sense of self and our place in the world are also influenced by many other factors: gender, race, sexual orientation, socioeconomic status, ability, country of origin. All of those things, and how the dominant culture regards these different identities. For example, Toni Morrison's essay explores how Black women's sources of self-regard changed from the era of slavery up into the 1920s. But we can imagine how different those sources would be for Black men, or white women, or white men during those eras. As Leah Mehta notes, it all depends on your sense of power and choice. Toni Morrison shows that once you come to have status in society, can choose who you love, and have greater imaginative and interior freedom, the sources of self-regard grow. Consider the sense of power and choice in terms of gender. Many of us remember a time when girls were encouraged to become mothers and housewives, or to pursue the feminine careers like nursing or teaching. Yes? Remember that? Their choices were limited, and so were their sources of self-regard. But the times, they are a-changin'. There are so many male occupations that are now being dominated by women. When I went to seminary, there were more women than men. And I know that for years, veterinary schools have enrolled way more women than men. And I looked it up, thank you, Google, and it turns out that medical school and law schools are also seeing majority women, slight majority women in their enrollment. And yet, despite these gains in choice, women's power, political, economic, still lags behind. Maybe things are changing there too. And then there's the power and choice, the status in society afforded people on the basis of their race. As with gender, we have made steps forward in decreasing some racial inequities. But events in the past several years have helped many of us realize that we haven't come as far as we had imagined. As we mark the second anniversary of the Unite the Right rally in Charlottesville and consider the apparent motives of the shooter in El Paso, we're confronted with the possibility that it may not be that we just thought we were farther along than we are, but that we're actually going backwards. While I had thought about the sources of self-regard based on race while reading Toni Morrison, I hadn't really considered how my racial identity as a white person might affect my sources of self-regard and worth. But as I was looking for information on today's hymns, I found a brief article. It's on a website called Be the Love. And that article really brought me up short. Its author, Unitarian Universalist Mech Groot, wrote that after finding out that our opening song, There's a River Flowing in My Soul, was written by a black woman, she started wondering if it was appropriate for her as a white woman to sing it. As she put it, after all, white people are generally conditioned to believe in our somebodiness. Dominant white culture affirms white people all the time. Ouch. For all my insecurities, for all our insecurities, those of us who are white are affirmed by the white dominant culture all the time in ways that people who aren't white are simply not. Even when we feel we don't have as much power, as much choice, as much status, we have more than others do. We're affirmed. But I'm glad to tell you that she affirmed that she and we can sing that song. Because our sense of self, our self-regard, our self-worth, our somebodiness is not just a function of our relationship with other people. The messages we receive from the people in our lives, it is not just a function of our place in the world and how we, in our intersectional identities, are judged by the dominant culture. Our somebodiness also derives from within. This is how Mech Groot puts it. She writes, ultimate significance cannot depend on being white. True somebodiness does not rest in how we compare to someone else. One of the greatest spiritual challenges for people with systemic privilege is learning that an authentic sense of somebodiness is an inside job, solidified by the love of community that cares about our ultimate significance. An authentic sense of somebodiness is an inside job. I take that to mean that our sense of self, while it begins forming based on the messages we receive from other people in our lives and the culture around us, it also depends on what Groot calls a soul awareness that we have significance. That independent of what others see in us and say to us, independent of what power and choice and status our culture affords us, We have inherent worth and dignity. An authentic sense of somebody-ness is an inside job. That's a tough one, especially if we've had experiences to the contrary, experiences that tell us that we don't have inherent worth and dignity, that we don't have agency. But as we grow and learn about the world, we can begin to realize that despite the strong messages we receive from people in our lives about who we are, despite the strong messages we receive from the culture about our place in the world, we can listen to that still small voice within and know that we are somebody and that we get to decide who that somebody is or is becoming. So let's head back to our original question. What is the source of your self-worth? I've come to believe that that our sources are many, that they come from within and without, from the people in our lives, the culture in which we live, but also from within. And I did my own random survey of people to find out their possible answers, and many people think of their source of self-worth in terms of the roles they play as a parent or a child, a spouse or a friend, a confidant or an ally. Many think of it as the jobs they do, as a healer, a teacher, an advocate, an artist, a scholar, a caregiver, an explorer, a planner, an implementer, an administrator. Still others define themselves by the values that guide their lives: fairness, justice, truth, love. Or by some trait that defines who they are: kind, careful, hardworking. Before we end, I want to return to the end of the reading that Earl started before the sermon. Remember, it suggested that while we may reach out our hands and say, "Hello, my name is Pam," because of the messages we've received, that we're really saying, "Hello, I'm worthless." And that when we come to a religious community like this one, we long to say, "Hello, I am somebody," and to be welcomed, round bellies, wrinkles, and all, to be affirmed and celebrated. So here's the rest of the reading by Reverend Naomi King. She writes, "Each of us has at least one blessing. I believe each of us offer many blessings to this world in who we are. But sometimes we and our world, even our beloved community, might have a difficult time affirming and seeing those blessings. So right now, we're going to have a little exercise." So Earl, Tom, do you want to help with this too? Earl and Tom are going to pass out name tags. And if you need to grab a pencil, you can as well. It says, "Hello, my name is." Go ahead and pass them around. But don't write down your name, okay? Instead, look into yourself and discover again one of your blessings, one of your gifts to the world: loving, peaceful, generous, compassionate, funny. Think about what you said to yourself during the time for meditation about who you are. Think about one of your many blessings and traits, and then write it on the name tag. Be bold. Be honest. You don't have to show it to anyone if you don't want to. Write your blessing on your name tag. So think for a few minutes. Do you guys have one yet? No? All right. There are more of you than I expected. All right, so if you don't have a name tag, take your order of service, find an empty spot on it. Write down your blessing. All right, I hope you all had a chance to write it somewhere. If you are feeling bold and brave, and if you wrote that on your tag, go ahead and put it on. If not, I invite you to take it home with you. Put it on and greet yourself with that blessing in the mirror. Share that greeting with one person today. We are all blessings to this world. Our work of building bridges of connection by finding and naming and affirming those blessings we are is the work of nurturing our spirits and healing our world. Amen. So I have one more thought to share before we sing our closing hymn. While our sense of self-worth comes from our relationships with other people, from the culture in which we live, and from that still small voice within, it also comes from those who came before. Our closing hymn acknowledges and celebrates those connections. We Are was written by Dr. Isay M. Barnwell of Sweet Honey and the Rock. You know them? This is the last song. All right. You can go ahead and get your teal hymnals out, but don't stand up because I'm going to tell you a few things first. Thank you, Tom. So this is the last song. It's 10:51 in your teal hymnal. But it's part of a suite that began with the lyric, "Laud, it's midnight, a dark and fear-filled midnight. Laud, it's a midnight without stars." That does not sound very hopeful, does it? So Dr. Barnwell wanted to create a complete circle of experience, and so she wrote, "For each child that's born, a morning star rises." This phrase is meant to establish hope. And it defines the uniqueness of each one of us. No matter what our race, culture, or ethnicity, each one of us has been called into being and are the sum total of all who came before. In Dr. Barnwell's words, each and every one of us stands atop a lineage that has at its core mothers and fathers and teachers and dreamers and shamans and healers and builders and warriors and thinkers and. So in spite of our uniqueness, we come from and share every experience that humankind has ever had. In this way, we are one. So I invite you to rise in body or spirit to sing number 1051. to celebrate the inherent worth and dignity that we all share. Now, the words come fast, and they're a little hard to say, so they give us the opportunity to sing it twice so that we can get it the second time. So Bill will help us. So the first bit we do twice, and then there's a longer part, and then we'll come back, follow Bill, and then we'll finish up the song. This is one of my favorites, so I hope you love it. Come on up, Bill.
There are lots of repeats in this. I guess we're going to sing the whole thing. So I hope I don't mess up.
You won't. You are beautiful just the way you are.
Mess and all. For each child that's born, a morning star rises and sings to the universe who we are. For each child that's born, a morning star rises and sings to the universe who we are. We are our grandmother's prayers, and we are our grandmother's dreamings. We are the breath of our ancestors. We are the spirit of God. We are mothers of courage and fathers of time. We are slaughters of dust and the sons of great visions. We're sisters of mercy and brothers of love. We are brothers of life and the builders of nations. We're seekers of truth and keepers of faith. We are makers of peace and the wisdom of ages. We are the grandfather's prayers, and we are our grandfather's dreamings. We are the breath of our ancestors. We are the spirit of God. We are mothers of courage and fathers of time. We are daughters of dust and the sons of great vision. We're sisters of mercy and brothers of love. We are lovers of life, our words are true, seekers of faith and brothers of faith. We are mothers of peace and the wisdom of ages. We are our grandmother's prayers, and we are our grandfather's dreamings. We are the breath of our ancestors. We are the spirit of God. For each child that's born, a morning star rises and sings to the universe who we are. For each child that's born, a morning star rises and sings to the universe who we are. For each child that's born, a morning star rises and sings to the universe who we are.
I invite you to take the hand of someone near you and let the words of that final hymn resonate within you. Did you know that you are all those things? Listen to the words of the morning star rising, singing who you are. Go in peace, go in love. Amen.